This is The Last Newspaper Reader, a book by Michael Angele. Other than being the author of this tale, Angele is the editor-in-chief of German weekly Der Freitag. In the last episode, Michael Angele professed a propensity towards hoarding articles for future reading. While he found joy in trawling through what was in effect old news, his ideal reader, Thomas Benhardt, was busy burying himself in the quirks of local news and firing off missives to various editors. This letter writing, Angele argued, compared favorably to what happens on social media today. Part 3 of our serialization of Michael Angele's pain to printed news sees the author stumble across a prescient article concerning the supposed demise of print. Could the lowering of intellectual standards across newspapers be to blame?
If a newspaper is too extensive, it can become a burden. Instead of the positive feeling of having lots of reading material to choose from, you end up with a guilty conscience. Instead of the joy of a discovery, and that's what a newspaper should really guarantee, what makes it a mini adventure for the soul, you're burdened by the task at hand. The dramatist and actor Franz Xaver Krutz, who'd invited me to his house on the outskirts of Munich, confirmed this to me. The Süddeutsche on a Saturday, that's enough material for 14 days, Krutz said. He only gets worked up by the Süddeutsche when, on the odd occasion, he buys it at the weekend. I'll tell you what my neighbour, who always buys it, does. Fritz, I say, what do you actually do with it? Well, I only read a very small part of it. The rest goes in the recycling. I read the spotlight section, he says, then flick through the sports pages a bit, then the Munich pages, and that's your lot. I don't read you, Francie, because you're in the feature section, right? Now, at this point, I have to state, even Franz Xaver Krutz practically only ever reads newspapers online these days. I simply wouldn't have expected that of a man like him. Not least because a phrase like, I don't read you, loses its power in the digital world. I would deem it a huge loss if real newspapers were to disappear from the world now, far too soon. I've always been fascinated by people you might not think of as newspaper readers, people who break the mould, who don't do what sociology prescribes of them. The manager of a department store who reads the Freitag, a tradesman who chooses Der Spiegel over Bild. In this context, I'm even fond of the snobbish, typically British songwriter who had his picture taken holding a Corriere della Sera. The Clash were my favourite band. First, I liked their raw energy, and then the diversity of their style. Punk rock soon became too restrictive for them. They discovered dub and jazz, all sorts, really. They were well-dressed, and their lyrics were radical. I was interested in the politics least of all. I found their slogans flat, but red stars embroidered on black shirts looked good. When Joe Strummer died, the band hadn't been around for quite some time. I'd lost track of Strummer, but I knew that punk and poser had almost gone full circle, returning to his roots as a busker. He wrote good songs with his band, the Mescaleros, which didn't need to be hits. They had a solid but not frighteningly large fan base. Strummer was a man in the prime of life, to whom a few hours with friends around the campfire meant more than the success he could have had if he'd reformed The Clash. Strummer, it was often said, had come to terms with it. He didn't need cheap fame. It was as if his earlier arrogance had been blown away. He seemed to love people. In a nutshell, he'd found himself. Such a person, if they really have to die far too soon, should at least die in a place where they feel good. Strummer died, as it was put, peacefully on a Sunday at his home in Broomfield in Somerset in the south of England. You could almost wish he'd been lying on the sofa reading a newspaper. And that's precisely how it was. Strummer was reading The Observer. What might Joe Strummer have read in The Observer? In order to answer this question, you have to first go to a newspaper archive. They haven't digitised the copies from 2002 yet. The archive of the Berlin State Library is located in an old grain silo in the Westhafen district. I could have used a different archive, but I like travelling to Westhafen. It's a journey to another era. There aren't any cafes with chai lattes, and tourists rarely end up there, although it almost has the feel of a museum about it. Vast parts of the area are no longer used. Lots of docks are empty. When you leave the underground station, a sign points right towards the immigration authority. Another one points left towards the newspaper archive of the State Library. It's a long way to the grain silo in which the newspaper archive is housed, but it's an unhindered walk. You don't come across many people. The cranes stand still. The warehouses are empty. Strummer died a few months before the outbreak of the Second Iraq War. The Observer from the 22nd of December 2002, the day he died, dedicates a good half dozen articles to the impending war. When Strummer was still in the Clash, he blared out simple anti-war slogans. Did he see the matter in a more sophisticated way now? And what did he think about genetic engineering, which was chosen by The Observer as the most important issue of 2002? Did he even spend any time thinking about it? Or did he get sentimental about the fishermen's strike in Cornwall, protesting over quota cuts by the European Union? Was he reminded of the great strikes under Thatcher, and about how everything started with the Clash and the great anger of 1977? And then I come across a long article about Jarvis Cocker. The singer from Pulp had moved to Paris with his family. Joe Strummer might have seen himself reflected in the article. "It's horrible when people say they're happy," he said. "But yeah, I am. I'm not as famous as I was, am I? It's not at a bad level now. Bus travel's quite possible, if you get a seat, on the front seat upstairs. I could get used to this and not pop up again until they do Britpop, the golden years. If that happens, just shoot me, right?" There's another article in that issue of The Observer. It's simply called About the Press, and deals with the demise of newspapers and the fact that newspaper readers are becoming fewer and fewer and older and older. Nothing's changed apart from the fact that articles about the demise of newspapers are increasing in number. If you want to get an impression of what might happen if the history of the newspaper ends unfavourably, you can go to the Romanisches Café in Berlin, or more precisely, what's now called the Romanisches Café. The old Romanisches Café was beside the Memorial Church. It was where Gottfried Benn, Else Lasker-Schüler, Otto Dix and Irmgard Kern, the Berlin coffeehouse intellectuals, used to socialise about 100 years ago. The so-called Romanisches Café, as you can safely call it, wants to carry on this tradition. It's not far from the historical café on the ground floor of a high-rise building called the Zufenster. There's a newspaper stand beside the entrance, which contained two sad copies of the Tagesspiegel when, on a single occasion, I ventured inside. I picked up one of them and immediately felt suspicious. Except for me, there weren't any other newspaper readers. In their place were all sorts of imitation marble, or perhaps real marble, I don't know a lot about it. And if one of the pieces of cake that you could choose from the long display case had fallen onto the floor, you could have picked it up and eaten it without a second thought. But in the so-called Romanisches Café, a piece of cake doesn't fall onto the floor. Although I actually wanted a coffee, I ordered a Darjeeling tea. Not simply a cup, but a pot, as if I had to punish myself for my presence and my mute defiance. I then attempted to read a story in the Tagesspiegel about the gas supply in Berlin, but I found it hard to concentrate. The gas supply business in Berlin is a complicated business. In the past, I would have had a cigarette. Although I gave up smoking years ago, I would be very happy if you were allowed to smoke in the Romanisches Café. Of course, you're not allowed to. In theory, you're still allowed to read books. There are coffee table books on the shelves between the big windows, which I suspect no one's ever picked up. You might even set the alarm off if you were to remove one of them. A fresco on the ceiling shows how you're meant to imagine the café. Sophisticated men with cravats and partings, in conversation with sophisticated women with hats and, as if mocking the smoking ban, slim cigarettes. If you gaze out of the large window, your attention's drawn to the Bikini House, an elegant, elongated building from the 1950s, which was completely renovated and reopened not that long ago. Inside, it's all vintage style. The facade reads, "Shop Different, Berlin's new concept mall." Shopping centres are one thing. Shopping centres that call themselves concept malls are another thing entirely. I've made my peace with shopping centres, but a world in which shopping centres are called concept malls is one in which I don't want to live. Now, you might argue that the Romanisches Café is a tourist trap, and you can't deduce anything from tourist traps like that, because they're precisely the opposite of what they pretend to be, extremely soulful and tasteful places. But that would be too easy, because I couldn't find any tourists in this tourist trap. In reality, an old lady was drinking her tea under the fresco, and the handful of other guests seemed more likely to be local West Berliners too. The reason you shouldn't be too quick to criticise is due to the people in the Romanisches Café who are more interesting than the meaningless place in which they find themselves. You find these types of people everywhere, no matter how bleak. In every bakery and every shopping centre, in every city in this country, they're waging a silent fight they're perhaps not even aware of themselves against the indignity of their environment. And sometimes they read a newspaper at the same time. can they not simply stop fighting? No, because as opposed to the places where they find themselves, they have a history. Behind me, two elderly ladies were chatting about a friend who still lives at home, but should really go into a care home but keeps putting it off, like all old people who live at home but should really go into a care home. When they started talking about a Persian woman, I couldn't help but think of the Persian woman in Thomas Bernhardt's novel, Yes. However, they were referring to the wife of a consultant who one of the two women in the Romanisches Café had recently seen in the garden but had barely recognised. The Persian woman looked old, the woman said, but she was really a good 10 years younger than she was herself. See how well I've aged, was what she was really trying to say. When the topic of the conversation changed to an eye disease, I pretended to be reading the newspaper. Reading a newspaper is excellent camouflage for a people watcher. You can note down what you've heard. The other party thinks you're just copying out an interesting part of the newspaper article, if they think anything at all. You could also cite this benefit as the saving grace of the newspaper. But in order to do so, the purpose of people watching would first need to be reinforced, ideally in schools. Of course, it's easier to read newspapers in the old cafes and salons in the east, such as the Grand Hotel de Londres in Istanbul. The late afternoon light fell softly on the deep red carpets and the jaded plush sofas. Most of these sofas remained empty, but a grey, mottled man was sitting on one of them, reading a newspaper. It was a copy of the Radikal, a small but renowned left-wing liberal Turkish newspaper, which was presided over by Orhan Pamuk as editor-in-chief for a while and now had to suffer under Erdogan. Our newspaper reader could have been a Turk, but he could equally have been an Englishman or a German. You couldn't say for sure. What was his profession? Had he come here to read in peace, or was he waiting for someone? If so, who? What does he make of the relationship between Turkey and Europe? Questions sprung from nowhere, directed towards the cosmopolitan sphere. The cosmopolitan seems inseparable from the idea of the global paper. We immerse ourselves in the cosmopolitan sphere when we buy the New York Times in New York, Le Monde in Paris, or The Guardian in London. But we ignore it when we sit in an internet cafe somewhere and check Spiegel online. Then we're experiencing globalization. Globalization destroys environments. The cosmopolitan transcends them. Most newspapers are read in certain environments, and for a long time it was possible to define an environment simply by knowing which newspaper was read in it. He reads the TAS, people would say, and a small genre painting would be formed at once. Maybe a taxi driver, a school dropout, worries about the world and is standing with women. Am I too macho? Too soft? Probably both at the same time. And if he's asked what his religion is, he'll say, just to be on the safe side, agnostic. Finally, insofar as marvellous hedonism is concerned, it's important to him that he knows which red wine he's drinking, and that the coffee's fair trade, but still tastes good. Our man could have also read the Frankfurter Rundschau, but the postman who delivered the post past a small front yard to the terraced house in Mariendorf, he read the Mottenpost. The Welt was read, if at all, by people who wouldn't hesitate to wheel a suitcase around the streets first thing in the morning. A newspaper will do anything not to insult its faithful readers. On the other hand, it has to attempt to attract and retain new, young readers who may come from a different environment, or perhaps even from one that isn't strictly defined. That's why style pages were introduced, pop media coverage in the culture section was increased, and the info box was invented. Too many aids for comprehension are the death of passionate newspaper reading. When, many years ago, the Tagesspiegel changed page 2 to a page called Questions of the Day, my love cooled considerably. It was soon extinguished almost entirely, and only started to glimmer again recently. In Questions of the Day, global political events are discussed in such a way that a schoolchild would have no problem understanding them. But schoolchildren don't gravitate towards the simplest explanations either. They don't gravitate towards newspapers at all, for that matter. All you can do is hope they later find their way to them. Newspapers are for adults, not children, and if they are for children, they're called children's papers. The Questions of the Day page in the Tagesspiegel is one of the most depressing inventions I'm aware of in the whole newspaper business. It represents the trend towards total comprehensibility. After all, even the slightest trace of unfamiliarity could scare off the readers. For fear of overtaxing them, you forget to stimulate them. There's good reason to fear that the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung will sooner or later get rid of a wonderful page like Events and Figures, a text-heavy page in the very best sense, or alter it beyond recognition, at the very least changing its quirky name, arguing that the reader isn't able to imagine what it represents. Instead of challenging the reader more often, we'd rather ask too little of them, so we go around facilitating access for them, as if we were dealing with a person with a minor disability. What people who are actually disabled, blind for example, really need is barrier-free newspapers online. They don't need a page full of the questions of the day. It must be said that newspapers don't, in general, have a lot of confidence in their readers. The reader doesn't know a lot, doesn't understand irony. Connections have to be explained to them in very simple terms, and there always has to be a picture somewhere, or else they'll get restless. That's more or less what they think. They imagine the reader as a big child, a bit dim and not especially good-natured with it, but irritable, easily offended. They've practically already cancelled the subscription. Of course, this impression isn't without reason. There really are readers like that. The newspaper publisher gets to know them when they write a letter to the editor, which they used to do in the past, and nowadays when they leave their comments underneath articles. These are often very stupid comments. But in the same way you shouldn't believe that the questions an author is asked after a reading are indicative of the intelligence of their audience, you shouldn't believe that people who write letters to the editor or leave comments are indicative of the readers of a newspaper. Unfortunately, the most pleasant, brightest readers are, not always, but often, the silent ones. They don't comment. They don't write letters to the editor. However, it's also true that numerous people, for their part, get irritated by the stupidity and ignorance of their newspaper without ever having made that public. With the local papers alone, there must be millions of irritated readers. Every time I visit my father or mother, I myself am witness to how they get irritated by the Tagblatt. They aren't educated people, but the ineptitude of a headline or an awkward formulation doesn't pass them by, even at their age, and they point out these stupidities to me. They're slightly aggressive about it too, as if I'm somehow partially responsible for their irritation. But they continue reading the paper, of course. People remain true to their newspaper because it irritates them, not in spite of this irritation. It's sad how little faith the publishers have in their readers and how cowardly they are when it comes to attracting subscribers. Hardly any of them still believe in the reader's pride for their subscription. The newspaper itself is rarely used as an enticement, and if it is, then it's with a strange idea of what reading the newspaper entails. In the advertisements for Die Zeit, it's not read Die Zeit, but experience Die Zeit, as if reading itself wasn't enough, but only a highly sensual, holistic experience, a wellness weekend, would do.
That was The Last Newspaper Reader, a book by Michael Angele, published in Germany by Galliani Berlin, and serialized in the Monocle Winter Weekly. In the fourth and final installment of The Last Newspaper Reader, we meet another group of people who are passionate readers of dailies and discover how the newspaper was an inspiration for writers such as Thomas Bernhardt. Plus, Michael Angele reveals his favourite places to read the newspaper, on the loo and at the breakfast table, among other locations.